Over the last few years, there's been a term that you've probably heard about or heard being used with increasing regularity. To some, it is considered to be one of the greatest crimes of our age. People have lost jobs over it, and careers have been that have taken years to build up have been wiped out literally overnight as a result of it. So what is this most offensive of crimes? It is called cultural appropriation. So what is cultural appropriation? Well, the Cambridge Dictionary defines it as the act of taking or using things from a culture that is not your own, especially without showing that you understand or respect that culture. The Oxford Dictionary goes a little bit further by defining it as the unacknowledged or inappropriate adoption of the customs, practices, ideas, etc., of one people or society by members of another and typically more dominant people or society. Recently, the definitions have started to become a lot more political. The concise Oxford Companion to English Literature defines it as follows: a term used to describe the taking over of creative or artistic forms, themes, or practices by one cultural group from another. It is in general used to describe Western appropriations of non-Western or non-white forms and carries connotations of exploitation and dominance. The concept has come into literary and visual art criticism by analogy with the acquisition of artifacts from Western museums. The term emerged during the last 20 years of the 20th century as part of the vocabulary of the post-colonial critique of Western expansionism. It brings together the Marxist notion of class appropriation, where the dominant class appropriating and defining high culture, and cultural colonialism. If that was their concise definition, I would hate to see what their full definition would be. It sounds a lot like something we heard about this morning, Babylonian syncretism. However, in this age, it seems that pretty much anything can now be deemed as cultural appropriation. Earlier this year, there was an article that appeared in several UK newspapers and a few in the US, which sums this up. Anna Del Rey, a 17-year-old student in college in Michigan, posted a recipe for tofurkey, a turkey substitute made from tofu, to a vegan Facebook group. After receiving several positive comments, the conversation took a turn for the worst. The dialogue went something like this: I loved your tofurkey dinner recipe you shared. How long have you been a vegan? Thanks, I love making it. I'm not a vegan though, sorry. Glad you enjoyed it. Oh, vegetarian? Question mark. No, I just don't like the taste and texture of most meats. Oh, so you're pretending to be a vegan because it's cool and in. I'm not pretending to be a vegan at all. I just like tofu more than most meats. Then came the punchline. Tofu is strictly for vegans and vegetarians. You are basically admitting to appropriating us and stealing what we need for your own selfish use. I am going to request to the admin that you are removed from our group. To which she responded, with all due respect, I am not appropriating anything. I'm eating food I like. A little later came a response back from an admin. You are going to be removed from this group for disrespecting vegans and their way of life and their needs. We do not tolerate that. Have a nice day. So what has this got to do with us? And specifically to do with the offering that we will be taking up shortly. Well, first, let's have a look at what God instructed his people. Turn, please, if you would, to Deuteronomy. But instead of going straight to Deuteronomy 16, we'll go to chapter 12. And we'll see what God's view on cultural appropriation is. In Deuteronomy 12, and we'll start in verse 29. When the Eternal thy God shall cut off the nations from before thee, whither thou goest to possess them, and thou succeedest them, and dwellest in their land, take heed to thyself that thou be not snared by following them, after that they be destroyed from before thee, and that you inquire not after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. Thou shalt not do so unto the Eternal thy God, for every abomination to the Eternal which he hateth have they done unto their gods. For even their sons and their daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. What things soever I command you, observe to do it. Thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish from it. God commanded his people to not even inquire after the other gods, or their ways of doing things, because he knew that if they did, they would take on their customs. This is why they were given the instructions at the very beginning of the same chapter. Let's read up in verse 1. These are the statutes and judgments which you shall observe to do in the land, which the Eternal God of thy fathers giveth thee to possess it, all the days that ye live upon the earth. You shall utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations which ye shall possess served their gods, upon the high mountains, and upon the hills, and under every green tree. And ye shall overthrow their altars, and break their pillars, and burn their groves with fire. And ye shall hew down the graven images of their gods, and destroy the names of them out of the place. You shall not do so unto the Eternal your God. It is very easy, especially when reading some of the stories of so-called cultural appropriation, to just dismiss it as liberal baffle-gab. But God knew that there would be serious consequences for Israel as a people if they were to start taking on elements of the various cultures that they were going to encounter. It is a theme that comes up time and time again, and as history shows, Israel as a whole has never learnt that lesson. Keep a finger there in Deuteronomy, because we will be coming back. And let's turn back to Exodus 23, and we'll see this reiterated again. In Exodus 23, and we'll start reading in verse 20. Behold, I sent an angel before thee to keep thee in thy way, in the way, and to bring thee into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him, and obey his voice. Provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if thou shalt indeed obey his voice, and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy unto thine enemies, and an adversary unto thine adversaries. For mine angels shall go before thee, and bring thee unto the Amorites, and the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. Thou shalt not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but thou shalt utterly overthrow them, and quite break down their images. You just drop down to verse 31. And I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea even to the Sea of the Philistines, and from the desert unto the river. For I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and thou shalt drive them out before thee. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. If you turn back to Deuteronomy, we'll see just how much God took this seriously. In Deuteronomy chapter 13, and starting in verse 6, if thy brother, the son of thy mother, or thy son, or thy daughter, or the wife of thy bosom, or thy friend, which is in thine own soul, entice thee secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which thou hast not known, thou nor thy fathers, namely of the gods of the people which are around about you, nigh unto you, or far from you, from the one end of the earth even unto the other end of the earth, thou shalt not consent unto him, nor hearken unto him, neither shall then I pity him, neither shalt thou spare, neither shalt thou conceal him. But thou shalt surely kill him. Thine hand shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. And thou shalt stone him with stones that he die, because he hath sought to thrust thee away from the Eternal thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. And all Israel shall hear and fear, and shall do no more any such wickedness as this is among you. If thou shalt hear say in one of these cities, which the Eternal thy God hath given thee to dwell there, saying, certain men, the children of Belial, are going out from among you, and have withdrawn an inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known. Then shalt thou inquire, and make search, and ask diligently, and behold, if it be truth, and the thing certain, that such abomination is wrought among you, thou shalt surely smite the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, destroying it utterly, and all that is therein, and the cattle thereof, with the edge of the sword. And thou shalt gather all the spoil of it into the midst of the street thereof, and shall burn with fire the city and all the spoil thereof, every whit, for the Eternal thy God. And it shall be an heap for ever, it shall not be built again. And there shall cleave nought of the cursed thing to thine hand, that the Eternal may turn from the fierceness of his anger, and show thee mercy, and have compassion upon thee, and multiply thee, as he hath sworn unto thy fathers. When you shalt hearken to the voice of the Eternal thy God, to keep all his commandments, which I command thee this day, to do that which is right in the eyes of the Eternal thy God. Pretty serious. We don't need to look to other cultures and religions to see how they serve their gods. God is very particular about how his law is to be kept and how we worship him. And this includes how and when we give our offerings. If you now just turn over a page or two to chapter 16, and we'll read, starting in verse 8. 6 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day shall be a solemn assembly to the Eternal thy God. Thou shalt do no work therein. Here we are today keeping that solemn assembly. Now if we drop down to verse 16, the well-known passage. 3 times or seasons in a year shall all thy males appear before the Eternal thy God, in the place where he shall choose, in the feast of unleavened bread, and in the feast of weeks, and in the feast of tabernacles. And they shall not appear before the Eternal empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Eternal thy God, which he hath given thee. In conclusion, please turn to Micah 6, a scripture that was read relatively recently. Micah 6, and we'll start reading in verse 6. Wherewith shall I come before the Eternal, and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will the Eternal be pleased with thousands of rams, or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Our God doesn't require us to give an offering beyond that which we can afford, but what does he require? Well, in the very next verse, verse 8, he hath shown thee, O man, what is good, and what doth the Eternal require of thee, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. Giving our offerings in the right manner, at the right times, and with the right attitude, is a vital part of walking humbly with our God. Offerings, like everything else we've been taught through God's word, is not something that has been culturally appropriated from another nation, but instead it has been given to us from God through his faithful servants. So now while we do take up the offering, we will be hearing some special music, which is Psalm 49. Hear my words, all lands and people, which will be sung by Mrs. Paula Henderson.